The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey, everybody, it's Stephen Schleicher. I'm asking for your help for something very important for our good friend, Rodrigo Lopez. Rodrigo has written a book. Rodrigo, you've written a book.
I did. I wrote a book, man.
It's called The Tale of Tallest Rabbit. What is Tale of Tallest Rabbit about? Is it about rabbits, right?
Partially about rabbits, yes. The Tale of Tallest Rabbit is actually the story of a young girl named Monique who finds herself surrounded by talking rabbits. And because of the way she wears her hair and because rabbits are not very smart, they just assume she's a rabbit.
So this is total fantasy world, right?
It is. It's
all yes. One story?
It's one overarching story and has a lot of smaller short stories as kind of we learn what this world is about. And actually, basically storytelling saves the day more than once.
Ooh, awesome. So this is a book for anybody, or is this for like older adults, or is this for young kids, or?
This is a book, as far as reading level, I would say 8 and up, but okay. This is a book that if you read it to a younger child, I think they would greatly enjoy. Also, I think, you know, I've shown this book to a lot of people, and most of them are people who are 20 years old and up. Most of the people that have read any of the book, and they all seem to really like it. I think there's a lot here for adults. You know, as far as, mm-hmm. you know, structure and kind of a few references and things like that.
Okay, so here's where we need our listeners' help. This book, The Tale of Tallest Rabbit by Rodrigo Lopez, comes out on January 12, 2016. Now, that may be in a couple of weeks or it may be tomorrow, depending on when you're listening to this release. But what we want you to do is we want you to head to Amazon.com on January 12th and order The Tale of Tallest Rabbit. Here's why we want you to do it on January 12th. A million of you all go in on January 12th and you buy this book. What will happen is Rodrigo's book will skyrocket in the selling list. And the higher it gets up on that list, the more people will see that, the more people will buy the book, and that will encourage Rodrigo to write even more books. Is that right, Rodrigo?
That is correct.
Look, if you have enjoyed Rodrigo's storytelling in Top 5, if you've enjoyed his stories in Critical Hit, if you've just enjoyed his general stories overall, I think you will enjoy The Tale of Tallest Rabbit. It looks like a lot of fun, and we want you to help out by buying this book on January 12th, 2016 at Amazon.com. You can get it in two formats, right, Rodrigo?
That's right. You can get a physical copy for about $13, and you can get just get the PDF or the Kindle version for about $5. Also, I'm pretty sure it's going to be available at least in Europe, but I have to like check some toggles and stuff to see if it'll be available in other regions as well.
Worldwide. Come on, everybody. Let's help out Rodrigo. Go buy The Tale of Tallest Rabbit. It's coming out on January 12, 2016. Head over to Amazon on that day. Mark your calendars now. Buy the book. Make Rodrigo even more famous than he is. Let's encourage him to write some more books. Let's game the system a little bit over at Amazon. We've learned this from our good friends Brian Brushwood and Justin Robert Young. With your help, we can do it. And we can see The Tale of Tallest Rabbit up there in the top 10 list, hopefully. Sounds good. Come on, listeners, help us out. Thank you so much for your time. Rodrigo, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, pick it up, read it, enjoy it, rate it. And definitely, if you like it, Fearsome Critter on Twitter mm-hmm. or Magic Turtle on Tumblr. Let me know what you think.
All right, everybody. Thanks so much. Thank you so much for your time. Good luck, Rodrigo. Let's send this book to number one.
This episode is brought to you by Major Spoilers VIP members.
VIP stands for Very Important People, and their small monthly contributions ensure that this podcast remains free for all of you.
If you would like to become a bronze, silver, or gold VIP member, Go to members.majorspoilers.com for more information.
I sure do thank you for your support. Now, here's your show.
What now, Beavis?
This week on Dueling Review, we review Star Trek Starfleet Academy No. 1, published by IDW Publishing, written by Mike Johnson and Ryan Parrott, with art by Derek Charm. A bold new chapter for Star Trek begins here in an all-new series that shows you what life is like for cadets at the galaxy's greatest school. Witness the student days of the iconic cast before they join the Enterprise, immediately before the blockbuster 2009 film. Plus, meet an all-new group of students as they embark on a bold new adventure of their own.
Dun, da, 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 da.
Welcome, Matthew, again.
Hello, welcome.
To another Dueling Review. This time we're taking a look at Starfleet Academy, No. 1. And, which of the three varying covers did you like, or which of the three covers did you like?
The cover that I got is the one with a big Uhura head and a Chris Pine floating in the background.
Yeah, the review copy that they sent us has all three, and I like the retailer incentive cover by Elsa. I think it's Cartier.
Mm-hmm.
Really nice. I like that. Unfortunately, it looks like none of the characters inside the book, especially our main character, who is a Vulcan, who is pondering whether or not to go back to her home planet.
Are you pondering what I'm pondering, Jalon?
And what? You need to join the club. You need to get in a club and meet some friends and go to travel in space. So, yeah, she's having some thoughts about sticking around in Starfleet once the Vulcan homeworld has been destroyed. And she wants to go and help repopulate with some good old dun 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 dun.
That's the music for the fight, not necessarily the part that comes after.
The Pom Far. No, one of her instructors, who is also somebody who is the only person of his species at the academy, says, hey, get involved in a club. In fact, there's the Inter-Academy Exploratory Competition that you would be perfect for because, conveniently, someone had to drop out. And if you complete it and you still want to leave, I will support you leaving. But until then, here's your teammates, and you're going to go up against a Vulcan crew. You're going to have all these other things going on. Have fun.
Friends.
That's part one. That's
big, hot, green-eyed Vulcan girl.
Yeah, that's the part one. The part two of this, because it flashes backwards and forwards from prior to the 2009 movie to sometime after the 2009 movie.
From 2258, when Spock and Uhura are at the Academy, to 2261.
So how many years is that?
Apparently they've gone, that's three. They've gone and beaten up the galaxy or something.
2260, what is it? 2258, 61. Oh, okay. I thought maybe Starfleet did things a little bit different. 3 years. Wow, a lot has changed in 3 years.
Has it?
I don't know. The other part, the one that takes place in the past, is Uhura tracking down some mysterious space signal. And her and Spock breaking up.
Kirk hitting on her.
Gaining the help of Chekhov. I got to say.
Brief appearance by her beautiful green Orion roommate.
Yeah, I say ditch the old story. Ditch the one with the cast in it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't care for that part of the story. I mean, I'm sure it's important because, you know, at some point, everybody's stories will converge and we'll find out what the mysterious signal is and all of that stuff.
Right.
But that just seemed, I don't know, somewhat pandering.
Well, I'll tell you what it is, and it's the same problem that I have with the recent release of the trailer for Star Trek Beyond Caring, is it's tying into the past of characters that we don't have any depth for. So we are looking at nostalgia for the old series, essentially carrying us into this adaptation of the new series. And I think that's that. Honestly, the weakness of really any reboot, but it's a real weakness of the new Star Trek. And, you know, it's one of the things that made Star Trek Into Darkness so problematic. This is a story about what happened behind the scenes with Spock and Uhura, and to a more limited degree, Chekhov and Kirk. But those characters, we've really only been around them for 4 hours.
Right.
All told in those two adventures. So all of what we're really trying to tie into, what they're trying to get us, is the 79 hours of Star Trek that we remember that didn't happen in this universe. This is now, you know, supposed to go, hey, it's Spock and Uhura, new adventures, but it's the new Spock and the new Uhura. And, you know, it rolls into that whole complaint that I have about remembering two separate bits of continuity. In order to really engage, you have to remember your affection for classic Nichelle Nichols Uhura, but then you also have to tie that together with your expectation of the new Zooey Deschanel Uhura. Wait, who plays Uhura?
Forget her name.
She plays Uhura, and she plays Gamora as well.
Mm-hmm. Uhura, Gamora.
She has a lovely name.
Yeah,
she's
yeah.
Very talented.
She's really super. She's super great. Zooey Deschanel. No,
Zooey
Sandinol. That's her name.
Sandinol.
Yeah. Star Trek. Sandinol. Yeah, that's got to be it.
Saldana. Zooey Saldana. Yes.
So here's the thing. I mean, if you're trying to promote this new series, and of course, there are a lot of people who are big fans of Star Trek 2.0.
Right.
And this is something that I think from that aspect might fill in those gaps of, well, how did these two hook up? How did all of this happen? What happened between the time that Kirk was doing this and then doing that? Mm-hmm. So I think that that's OK. It just feels very, at this point, unnecessary in this story.
Agreed. I think that the bridge between the two timelines is not yet evident
right.
in this issue. And we spend 27, 25 pages with these two parallel timelines, but no real explanation of what they have in common. And I think that storytelling-wise, that's a flaw in the issue that's mm-hmm. really going to be hard to overcome.
Now, I really like the second story. I like the story of Talal, I think is her name, right?
Talan.
The Vulcan who wants to go home and being conscripted into this game.
Yeah. And her lovely multinational group of
comrades. She has a mixed group from different races and aliens and species. She's got one of those blue
Andorians.
You got a human Andorian, another human, and then you've got an alien guy who I don't even know what he is.
I'm not sure if I'm familiar with the race. You know who he looks like?
Who does he look like?
Lieutenant Eryx from the cartoon.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You remember Eryx with his big rubbery head and his
mm-hmm.
three arms?
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of aliens represented in many of these group shots. Many of them we've seen in both Enterprise and Star Trek 2.0 and Star Wars classic Trek.
There's a Tellarite, and there's
a Telleleft.
What was Dr. Phlox? There's a Dr. Phlox in here.
There's Dr. Phloxes and all sorts of things in there. The blue guys that breathe in the mist that Wesley met at the Academy. All those guys are there, which I like. I mean, I really dig it. And, you know, when you say, hey, here's a competition, I mean, many people might say, oh, this is kind of like the Harry Potter, you know, competitions that he did at the school against the other ones. I mean, was that Goblet of Fire?
5 points to Vulcandor.
I think it was Goblet of Fire was that book. But I think the interesting thing is I can get behind this group of kids thrown together, forced to work together to best everyone else, and how are they going to come together as a team? That part I like. I really like that part of the story.
I agree. When it comes to, for lack of a better word, expanded universe stories, mm-hmm. I feel like it's better when it's somebody created. Because if you've read historically Star Trek comic adaptations, Paramount actually had a rule at one point, no original characters.
Right.
And, you know, you can't assemble your own crew. And they did at Marvel and at DC. They slowly assembled these characters. And then the marketing people went, nope, dump them.
Mm-hmm.
So Lieutenant Bearclaw is forever trapped in limbo. But I really prefer that. And I feel like for a comic adaptation existing kind of on the fringes of the established movie Star Trek universe, it's going to be, first of all, more natural. I think it's going to be a better read if you're dealing with things that don't have to have repercussions that might be
retconned
away by Star Trek Beyond. You know,
let's
say, for instance, something happens to Uhura in Star Trek Beyond and totally changes her raison d'etre. That is something that will affect your appreciation of adapted Uhura, even if it's a flashback Uhura.
Yeah.
And I also feel like, as much as I love Zachary Quinto, this is a very realistic looking Zachary Quinto. And when you show me Zachary Quinto Spock, I think it's Quinto.
Yes.
That's a completely different character for me than Leonard Nimoy Spock. Mm-hmm. Not a bad character, not terrible, not necessarily inferior, but he's not my favorite Spock. Yeah. And I feel like if you look at this and from that perspective, again, the characters adapted from the movie are the least interesting part, both visually and story-wise, of this issue.
Yeah, I think when you're talking about visually, this is one where we talk about the characters trying to be on model, but that's also where it fails, because you try too hard to get a certain nose or a chin or a hairline, and it fails really poorly. And so it makes it look ugly. But then when the artist is able to take on a character that's new and original, like these team members, you can do whatever the heck you want with it. And, you know, it's nothing against Charm's work, but I think it looks better. I think it looks better when he's doing doing the forward, the present day stuff.
Right.
The fact, of course, it's all it's not present day, but, you know, the future story.
The future of the future, rather than the past of the future.
Yeah.
And, you know, when he's drawing Anton Yelchin, Yelchin, who plays Chekhov, never quite has the right nose. Mm-hmm. When he's drawing Talon, Talon looks perfect all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Her friend, her new friends, Lucia and Shrev and Margot and Operator Chen. Number 9.
Yeah, Grace Chen
and
Bunny Ears and all that stuff.
Bunny Ears, Lawyer, and Lizard Face. All of it, Yak Face and Hammerhead and Lizard
Who are you calling a scruffy nerf herder?
All of those guys look awesome. And we're getting to a point where they're kind of having both. They're balancing, trying to have the cake of, this is a Star Trek adaptation. This is real Star Trek. This is something that's tied into Star Trek as you know your Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And that awesome new movie that you loved 5 years ago. But it's also something that's clearly going to boldly go where no one has yet gone in this universe. See what I did there? I tied in their tagline. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I saw that. Perfect. Excellent.
The 100th anniversary of the founding of Starfleet Academy.
Yes.
Dun, da, da, dun, da, da, da. But yes, it makes for an awkward balance. And honestly, if this were two separate comics.
Yes.
If it were one flashback of Uhura at the Academy and one Talon and her amazing friends at the Academy, I think it would be, first of all, two stronger books, but only one that I really want to read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like all the new characters that we're introduced to, even Grace Chen. You talk about diversity. You even have someone who has a handicap where she's invented these bionic legs to help her walk or to walk. Yeah, she made them.
Exosuit.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, I really dig that second part of the story. I want to see what happens next. I do want to see how the two stories converge, but I could care less about, you know, Kirk being Kirk and the love quarrel between Uhura and Spock. I don't care about any of that. I never cared about it in the in the movie, because I thought it was
extraneous.
Yeah, I thought it was mashed. I thought it was there for no reason, right?
Yeah, and these specifically, we're dealing with two aspects of the film that were added, I think, to make it feel more palatable to modern audiences.
Yeah.
They put in the romance and they made the leader a maverick with no respect for anyone.
Right.
He's a maverick who's just that good. He's so good at his job that he can be an utter jackwagon and still be the best captain in Starfleet. And both of those decisions are problematic for fans of the original Trek. And they're two of the decisions, I think, probably the two most controversial and problematic decisions for me, the parts that I'd want to ignore.
Yeah.
So, yeah, when Spock and Uhura broke up, I'm like, yeah, woo, wait, this is a flashback.
Yeah, this is all a flashback.
They get back together.
Yeah. Darn it. Dang it. But if you are a fan of Star Trek 2.0, I think you might enjoy this a lot. I think you'll get the necessary stuff that you may or may not want to fill in missing gaps of information. If you're someone who just likes new Starfleet stuff and you've always wanted an Academy story, well, here's an Academy story for you, too, that's tied up in an adventure chase, which I find super interesting. Like I said, I want to read the second book just to see what happens next.
Overtones of that episode where Wesley Crusher was part of Red Squad.
Yeah, or even, yeah, Red Squad, or even, like I said, Harry Potter, or even like a red shirts kind of thing, because they all are wearing red shirts.
Well, everybody wears red in the future, dude.
Boy, cannot wait. So for me, I say, if you're a Star Trek fan, check it out. I think if you're a casual Star Trek fan, this probably is not going to hit the mark with you.
I would say if you love New Trek, this is a book for you. I would say if you are jonesing hard for some Star Trek Expanded Universe, this is the book for you. Otherwise, it's kind of a maybe.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll see what happens there. Let's take a look and see what's coming out next week. Dark Horse Comics has BPRD, Hell on Earth Trade Paperback Volume 12.
That's pronounced Biprid.
Fight Club 2, number 8, Game of Thrones.
That's a total of 16.
There's a Game of Thrones, a couple of action figures that come out next week. Sansa Stark and, what's it, Jorah Mormont.
Sansa Belt and Jory Marmont.
Yep, Chateau there's Marmont. Also a Goon plush if anybody's interested in that. And that's the other thing, too, being Christmas next week.
Yes.
Things seem a little lighter, but I mean, there's still plenty of comics. I mean, don't think that Wednesday is Christmas. I mean, it's next Friday, so there's plenty of time to rush out and buy new comics. You might head over to
rush
DC.
Rush right out in a buying frenzy.
You might be interested in DC's Aquaman number 47 or Art Ops number 3. That's a mature reader's comic. Batman and Robin Eternal number 12. Batman Arkham Knight number 12. Cyborg 6. DC Comics Bombshells number 7. Justice League of America number 6. Robin, Son of Batman, number 7, Robin War tie-in.
Son of Batman.
There's also Sinestro, number 18.
He has his own book?
Sinestro, yeah, for a while now, 18 whiles now.
Well,
Teen Titans also have their book that ties into the Robin War. It's Teen Titans, number 15.
I'm familiar with Teen Titans.
And Titans Hunt, number 3.
Titans.
Have you read that?
Yes, I really enjoy Titans
Hunt. Okay, cool.
Titans Hunt is the book that's kind of restoring Teen Titans continuity in the wake of the New 52 and admitting that there was a Teen Titans team before Teen Titans number 1 in 2011.
Awesome. IDW
also bringing back Mr. Twister.
IDW has Rocketeer at War number 1, String Drivers number 5, TMNT Ongoing number 53, Transformers versus G.I. Joe number 10. Now that they're all officially in the Hasbro universe, movie universe, I think we're going to see more of that.
I believe we're going to call that.
I think we're going to see more of that going forward. Also, there's the X-Files Xmas special. That's an $8 book.
Da, 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 da.
Ho, ho, ho. Image Comics has Chew number 53. Deadly Class number 17. Island number 5. Jupiter Circle volume 2 number 2. Nameless number 6. Outcast by Kirkman and what's his name? I don't know how to say his name. Azaceta? Azaceta? Okay.
Azaceta.
Saga number 32 and Sidekick number 12. Marvel has Marvel has a short week next week. Amazing Spider-Man number 5. Angela Queen of Hell number 3. Captain America Sam Wilson number 4. Daredevil 2. Darth Vader 14. That's a Vader Down tie-in. Deadpool number 4. Extraordinary X-Men number 4. Let's see. What do we got? So we got the guidebook to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Marvel's Thor. You've got a couple of trades and you got Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur number 2, New Avengers number 4, Patsy Walker, a.k.a. Hellcat number 1 comes out next week. A lot of people are very excited about that. Spider-Woman number 2, Star-Lord number 2, Venom Space Knight number 2, not to be confused with Rom Space Knight. Although I wonder. X-Men Epic Collection Trade Paperback. What is it? It says Gift. X-Men Epic Collection Trade Paperback Gift, $35.
I wonder if it means specifically designed to be a Christmas gift.
Maybe that's what it is. Already prepackaged for you. Aliens versus Zombies number 5 comes out in all the rest category. Bloodshot Reborn, let's see, number 9. There's also a number 1 $1 incentive issue. Does that say Cheech? It does say Cheech Wizard's Book of Me hardcover.
Yeah, Cheech Wizard.
Who's that?
Cheech Wizard?
Yeah, I don't know who that is.
Oh, he's a character who flies around. I can't remember the name now.
I keep wanting to say Cheech Wizard's Book of Me. I keep going, Dave's not here, man.
Cheech Wizard used to show up and, oh, dang it, I should know this. The artist is actually relatively sort of kind of famous, but he used to show up in the likes of like Epic Illustrated and such. He's kind of an adult weird comic guy. Oh, this is going to drive me nuts.
Cheech Wizard, huh? Okay.
First appearance
in National Lampoon's Last Gasp Fantagraphics in 1967.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Vaughn Baudet.
I recognize the character, yes.
Yes.
Okay, I recognize the character now. But when I saw it, I was like, what the what?
Cheech Wizard and Chong.
Dave's not here.
Doctor Who, 11th
Cleric,
Doctor, year
Chong
two,
Cleric.
Number four.
That's the joke. Go back. 3, 2, 1. Cheech Wizard and Chong Cleric. Just edit that part out. Yeah.
Who is it?
Hey, man, open the door. It's me, Chong Cleric.
What? Who is it?
Hey, open the door, man. It's me, Chong Cleric.
Who?
Chong Cleric. Open the door, man.
Chong Cleric's not here, man.
Doctor Who 12.
That was a
12th
long
Doctor.
Way to go for that joke, brother. That was
Why
a
not,
long
man?
Way to go.
Why not? Doctor Who 12th Doctor number 15. Doctor Mirage Second Lives number 1. Ooh. Fathom Blue number 6. Let's see, who else do we have in here? John Carter, Warlord of Mars number 14. King number 3. Klaus, number 1, gets a third printing from Boom
Klaus.
Studios. Munchkin
Klaus.
Number 12. Munchkin 12. There you go. On the 12th month.
On the 12th day of Munchkin, my true love gave to me.
Oh, no. Your true love ain't getting you anything in Munchkin. Just take
12
it away.
12 Munchkins munching 9.
Venus number 1 comes out next week, as does Wack Fu number 1. Have no idea what Wack Fu number 1 is about. Let's look that up. Wack Fu number 1.
That was a cartoon. Wack
it Fu. Was a cartoon.
Yeah, it's not anymore.
And The Wonderful World of Wack Fu in comics. For the first time, the colorful, wacky world of the hit series Wack Fu is to be available in comics in
not
this first issue.
Waifu, which is entirely different.
Yes, the intrepid hero in the making, Yogu.
We go for Gogu.
And his friends stumble across a mysterious amusement park while the band explore, it seems, that no one of their number has caught the eye of the secretive and lonely Shack Shaka.
Wow, the old abandoned amusement park.
Yeah, don't go to the old abandoned amusement park, kids. And finally, don't forget Zen Hard Bounty number 3, Zen Intergalactic Ninja.
Intergalactic Zen Ninja. Zen
oh, yeah, we
ninja.
Should throw that at the beginning of the beginning of this podcast, since we're talking Star Trek. Next week on Dueling Reviews, we take a look at Rocketeer at War number 1.
Yay!
Europe, 1942. The world is at war. As the Allies...
No.
Oh, how
you
should
do it like this.
Oh, yeah. Europe, 1942. The world is at war. As the Allies battle against the Axis, able-bodied men everywhere enlist in the war effort, including Cliff Secord. Secord, also known as the Rocketeer, has been thrust full throttle into the heat of battle, and with or without his jetpack, he will depend on his wits and daring if he's to survive. That's next time on Dueling Review.
On Dueling Review.
No, we're back into the thing. You can show your support for this show and everything that we do at Major Spoilers by becoming a very important patron at members.majorspoilers.com. Your contribution allows us to keep this show going, pay for our growing costs, and gives us the motivation to produce more content for you. Thank you again for checking out Dueling Review, and we'll talk to you next time when you'll hear Matthew say,
"Make it so, number one."
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.